This is the Leadership and Insurance Podcast, brought to you by FinPro Search Partners.
Insurance companies are businesses and they need to look for the long term and be sustainable.
We went from 0 to 1 and now it's going from 1 to 100.
Insurance as a concept, as a kind of service, is brilliant. The execution is what we're looking at now.
I think the companies that are going to succeed are the ones that are going to understand and master the art of intent.
When we talk about innovation, we lean too heavily to think about technology and we don't think about creating a culture of innovation.
I think innovation is essentially continuous improvement of existing processes and platforms and product.
Right? It's got to be easy. It's got to be seamless.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we have an exciting session now, a live podcast with the leadership in insurance. So please sit back, enjoy this episode from Alex and Vishal. So please give it up, a warm applause.
That's very polite of you. Thank you very much. And welcome to the Leadership in Insurance podcast live at InsurTech Insights. I'm really lucky today, and I genuinely am, because someone's actually flown in to see me. Normally, I'm just Zooming, and so that's quite exciting. Does anyone listen to the podcast at all? That's really good for my ego. Thank you very much. It's nice to know people know who we are. If you don't, my name's Alex Bond. I'm the founder and managing partner of a company called FinPro. We're an executive search firm, and we run this podcast on a weekly basis. So just to give you some context, we interview C-suite execs from the insurtech and insurance industry, and I'm really lucky today to be joined by my good friend V8, who is CEO of Resilience. V8, welcome.
Alex, thanks for having me.
Yeah, not at all. I feel like we're in really safe hands here because we've had many chats on the lead up to this and we've got some really interesting questions, but we're going to hopefully have some questions from the audience as well if we get some time. So we're going to try and build in some time for that. So thank you. Guys, the timer's not started. I don't know if you want to set the timer for me. That'd be great, because I will go over, definitely. Thank you. So, V8, we've got to start from the top, really. I know you are, but the good people listening at home and the good people listening live may not. So it'd be really good if you could introduce yourself and obviously the Resilience business.
Absolutely. Well, my name is Vishal and I go by V8. I'm the founder and CEO of Resilience. It's a cyber risk management company that sells cyber insurance as well as an amazing tech platform to help companies translate, track, and transfer their cyber risk.
Amazing. I think what I really liked when we've spoken before is specifically how you position Resilience as a business. And I asked you, are you a CEO of an insurtech? Are you an insurer? How do you position and why does it matter?
This has been a challenge over the years, but I would say very clearly, I am a cyber risk management CEO, right? Building the platform that helps companies navigate the world of cyber risk, of which insurance is a key part of it, but not the sole part of it. And that matters because it really sets the priorities for the long term and the focus. Not looking to be the next largest CEO of an insurance company, looking to be the CEO of a company that everyone looks to for guidance on cyber risk issues, period.
I think that's a really interesting kind of proposition. I think we talked about how we're seeing this more is that, insurance is one part of risk management. And sometimes when we work in insurance, we can get a bit carried away with it being the only solution. But really, then you're coming in potentially too late. And I think to give us some context about that, Via, you've got a really interesting personal background. And I think to give everyone, I know some people will know you in the audience, but to give them that context about your life prior to Resilience, I think is really important because I think it says how you think about risk.
Yeah, it's a great way to say that. For me, it's all about perspective. And I've been very fortunate. My career before coming to the insurance industry spanned cyber warfare, cybersecurity, and now in the cyber risk transfer space. But I started out as an Air Force, U.S. Air Force cyber warfare officer, served at the NSA, got to work overseas and really see and learn what the bad guys are up to, how they operate, and what they do, right? I learned the key elements of exploitation and attack. But then, more importantly, I left that. I joined the reserves, and I started a cybersecurity company. It was the first acquisition by Palo Alto Networks, the world's largest cybersecurity firm. And I got to see how defenders deal with attackers like me. And then the beautiful thing in all that, in that journey, was I got to also see the middle ground, the policy that drives our nations and our companies towards the legalities or the rules and regulations that our enterprises operate within. And so between cyber warfare and the offensive side, cyber policy, that gray space, and cyber defense in the blue space, I have a perspective that I'm really excited to share. And the key takeaway in all of this, what I've realized, is that cybersecurity is not a technical problem. Fundamentally, in cyber risk in general, it is a human problem. It is a behavioral issue. You have to respect that the adversaries, the folks that are leading to these losses or these attacks, are actually just human beings on the other end of the keyboard. They have a profit motive, and they have a reason to innovate. And so defenders who are continuously looking at their controls and setting up their defenses, they should also keep in mind that there is an adversary looking to exploit that and looking to continuously improve regardless of where you are today.
That answer's made me want to skip. I was going to ask about acquisition, but I want to kind of delve a bit deeper into that. And you very kindly shared some articles with me that I was looking at. And this is a quote from the Council of Foreign Relations Task Force Confronting Reality in Cyberspace article. It said, like, the utopian vision of an open, reliable, and secure global network has not been achieved and is unlikely ever to be realized. Today, the internet is less free, more fragmented, and less secure, which is quite a scary statement to read. You had to speak to President Biden, and the airtime alone, I think, says the seriousness of the problem. But what could be done at a policy level without impinging on the freedom promised by the internet at its inception?
So, being able to be on that the Council on Foreign Relations Task Force was a absolute treat. I got to see and speak with the highest levels of government and just understand how they are viewing this problem, right? The key thing that I would say is it's not about impinging on freedoms, it's not about censorship, it's not about anything like that. What they're really focused on is, as the report says, the internet's already fragmented. But how do we find the fragment that we belong in? Our society, free market capitalistic economies, how can we trust and rely and operate in a secure environment, right? And the task force, one of the key things there is we need to establish norms. What is acceptable and good? And number two, make sure that our countries, our law enforcement agencies, our technical agencies are working together to maintain those norms and standards so that all of us, individuals and enterprises, can operate with some sense of normalcy and security. Now, separately, I was lucky enough to, I was fortunate to be invited to the White House to speak to President Biden after the spate of ransomware attacks that happened a few years ago. And, he asked me, how can insurance play a role? My response was pretty clear, right? Insurance, and we're here in InsurTech Innovations, right, or Insights, it's all about innovation. I made the comment that, look, seatbelts are thanks to the auto insurance industry, right? Life insurance premiums, they're directly tied to smoking, and there's a strong correlation with the decrease in smoking in the United States. Why not have that same paradigm applied to cybersecurity and help us set the standards, whole of nation, whole of government, whole of ecosystem, to set the standards for cyber hygiene and to maintain them?
I think there you stress the importance of something that you and I talked about previously, which is that when we met the first time, you stressed the importance of the history within insurance and lessons that we can learn to move forward and innovate. And I thought that was really resonant with me because I think sometimes we're too busy looking forward, looking for new things, and actually sometimes some of the secrets are in the past. Are there any particular businesses or innovations that you reflect on in sort of insurance history that you've applied to the resilience business?
Absolutely. There's as we were thinking about this, and the start of resilience, it was really all around that behavioral aspect. How do we drive better cyber hygiene, better behavior from enterprises? And once they get to that hygiene level, how do we help them continue to engage and continue to get better. Because remember, coming back to it, cyber is a behavioral issue. The adversaries are going to continue to improve. The attacks are going to continue to come, even if you have the best standards today. What we realized and what I looked at, insurance, over 400 years of amazing history, of putting a price to good and bad behaviors, period, regardless of the vertical, regardless of the industry. The two industries that really stood out to me, one was the steam boiler insurance industry, late 1800s, really helped the railroad and the Industrial Revolution kick off properly, but people didn't understand how to properly configure or plan around steam boilers and preventing them from exploding. They wouldn't underwrite it. I was looking at some of these actuarial studies from the late 1800s, early 1900s. Unless you had an inspector come evaluate you, evaluate your process, and then continuously engage you in the upkeep of your steam boilers, then you could get a policy, right? So it made me realize you can get beyond just one application form once a year. You can actually start to get more ingrained with the client and help them understand this dynamic or this complex risk. The separate point, and the separate innovation that I really appreciated, was healthcare and the health insurance industry in the United States. Kaiser Permanente, you ask most Americans, they'll say, that's a healthcare company. In reality, they're the largest, by direct written premiums, healthcare insurance companies in the US, but nobody thinks of them as an insurance company. And I think that's really fascinating, right? It's helping folks continue to stay ahead of a complex risk, health, while being financially secure. And so to me, those two industries, steam boiler and healthcare, have been kind of guiding principles for resilience and what we're trying to do here for cyber insurance.
Yeah, and I think that reflects on a trend we're seeing in some of the more successful insurtech startups that we've come across, in that we're approaching insurance as a risk management challenge, and insurance being one part of that, and like you obviously, cyber's been a big proponent of that. We can look at health insurance where you've got gamification and rewards for going to the gym, because then it prevents you getting sick and therefore your claims are reduced. And then we're even seeing that with companies like Counterpart, kind of helping small businesses with like management liability by offering them kind of HR policies, legal policies to make them a better risk. And almost it's the embedded, to be an overused term, I think on this podcast we've talked to embedded solutions, but I think just embedding, do you understand what I mean when I go, it's embedding risk management practices into businesses that we've probably done a bad job of?
Yeah, the word we like to use is engagement, right? I don't know that we will ever be able to put ourselves fully in the shoes of the defenders of these enterprises dealing with the risks day to day. Been there, done that, but more importantly, it's a business decision that they need to make in their outlay on cybersecurity controls, in their response to the evolving nature of the cyber threat. But it's a business risk decision, not a financial insurance decision, nor is it a technical security decision. Done correctly, we engage them and help them prioritize and put it into perspective. The right business metrics, it's all about the dollars and cents, right? Yeah. And so you can choose to patch, you could choose not to. At the end of the day, that's a business choice. How much you have on the balance sheet and how much risk transfer you have, again, up to you. But let's engage, help you translate that. What you do with it is up to you.
Engagement's a brilliant word. And I'm actually going to ask you later how we're going to make insurance fun, because I know we said we're going to talk about that. But one thing that I said yesterday on a panel is that I think we've got to give up getting people to fall in love with insurance, because they're not going to. But we can get them to engage with it. They're not going to fall in love, but they might be our friend. I think that's as far as I think we're going to get. We're talking there about looking backwards, but I was reading your claims report, which I thought was really insightful. When anyone listens to me on the podcast, I used to work in claims, bit of a claims nerd. But when we look at claims, your report shows how differently you approach the evolving threat landscape. And traditionally, we look backwards to go forwards. But obviously, when you're looking at claims in the cyber world, you have to be looking out front. And it's too late to quantify risk once it's already happened, because then it evolves past that and then we've got a new threat that we're looking at. What are the biggest emerging trends in cyber that are causing you the most concern, or certainly you're paying the most attention to?
Well, you bring up a great point. I think what there's two parts to cyber. One is getting to a certain baseline level of hygiene and protection, which is fundamental to all good insurance. The part that we at Resilience really appreciate, though, is once you're at that good baseline, you have to keep up with it, keep up with the bad guys. And to your point, actuarial just looks backwards and helps you just identify that standard. Great to get there, but you got to get ahead, to your point. What we do is our threat intel team continues to engage and look at what the bad guys are up to and helps us inform our priorities to the clients. Now, your specific question, what are the things that give me the most concern? It's the ones that lead to the largest severity of financial losses from our claims experience. Now, over the last 2 years, we put out claims reports twice a year. Ransomware, which catches all the headlines for cyber, 2 years ago, that was number 5 on our list. This year, it's at number 3 in terms of just severity. But business email compromise was ahead of that. And the thing that really worries me is third-party and supply chain risk, vendor risk management. A lot of the companies we engage with, they're pretty good at cybersecurity today. They're first party, what they can control. But you ask their CISOs or their head of security, what do they worry about? What keeps them up at night? It's the stuff that happens outside of their network. It's the dependencies on the contractors or the vendors that they have no control over. The Target and Home Depot breaches that made headlines years ago, third-party vendors. And I think what the adversaries and the bad guys are realizing is those third-party vendors don't have the means and the maturity to have great cyber defense. So let's get into them. They have a trusted relationship with the larger companies, and let's leverage that. So third-party and vendor risk management, honestly, is my biggest, the trend that worries me the most coming up. Most recently, Change Healthcare. It's affecting many healthcare companies, and it's all because of one tech company that had access to all the largest hospitals, right? So this is the concern that I see for the future.
I want to switch gears slightly because we're here at, this is a very entrepreneurial conference. We've got a lot of people here, startups and scale-ups, and obviously you've been going through that journey. And looking in a challenging fundraising environment the last couple of years, 18 months, particularly for InsurTech, you've managed to raise an up round. Kind of want to dig into why you think that is, and we'll probably have some entrepreneurs in the audience, but what tips and tricks might you have for the InsurTech entrepreneurs here that they can learn from that experience?
So I think it really comes down to two things. Number one is having a very clear and compelling vision with the business metrics behind it and delivering on what you say you're going to do. Number two is ensuring that you take a valuation that you can grow into responsibly. Another way of saying, every valuation and up round means you have room to grow above. If you take too high of a valuation and you don't have the means to achieve that value in the future, you're going to be in trouble. And I think what a lot of companies realized over the last 2 years, the market's shifted, right? Valuations have come down rapidly. No fault of any of these companies, but the aggressive valuation they took in 2021 or 2022 is no longer justified. And if they didn't have the means or the results to command that valuation in the future, they're going to be stuck with a down round. So I would encourage all entrepreneurs to just have a very clear sense, what are the targets you're promising to your investors, by what point, both business numbers and product vision numbers or delivery, and separately, that you take only enough to achieve those targets plus a little bit more for risk. That's it. Anything above that, you're asking for trouble. You got to be able to grow into your valuation responsibly. Thankfully, our investors have kept us on the right path, the right valuation, so that there's always upside. And most importantly, freedom of action with the resources we have to test out and achieve our vision.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And talking about growing, you're growing into something, you've grown the team quite dramatically, obviously. Research firm, we like to talk about teams. You and I were just talking off stage where you've about 40 people in UK now focusing on Europe, or 50 in total, I think, and then 200 in total in the business, roughly?
Yeah, roughly. Those are good numbers.
How do you stop those kind of cultural divides, if there are any? Because you've essentially got the software cyber risk management, and then you've got the kind of insurance side. Do they play well together? Are there any problems?
Yeah, this is. I see some of my team members laughing in the audience here. I think culture is obviously any startup CEO talks about culture on a regular basis. But for us, you know, we said insurance at the A round several years ago. Insurance is the right start to building a next generation cyber risk company. You have to ensure that everybody on the team, regardless of what background they came from, whether it's insurance, whether it's security, whether it's startup, tech, product building, that they're signing up for the exact same vision, right? And that they are not here because they're insurance people or because they're security people. It's because they believe in the vision of that combination of cyber risk management and that they want to do that. They're excited to. You're not going to always get it right. Some people are going to join for the wrong reasons and they'll eventually see their way out. But having the right core people that have that shared vision drives that down regardless of where they are. The second point, though, and that's functional, second is geographic. It's just being very clear with what the goals and visions are and ensuring that there's communication on a regular and recurring basis across the entire company. And you know, I'm out here in Europe chatting with you. This is a great invite, and I'm glad to be here. But it also gave me an excuse to have a mini all-hands with my London team yesterday, right? And ensuring that we have a regular flow of their feedback to the headquarters in the U.S., that we're understanding and feeling their pain, but more importantly, that we're responding to it, that we're collectively identifying the opportunities, the problems, and solving them together, regardless of where they sit.
It really resonates with me. Something that I'm asked about a lot is that how do we make insurance attractive for new talent, and particularly that might be talent that's outside of the industry, say bringing in tech talent that's never worked in the industry before. Thankfully, my colleague Gavin has to deal with that rather than me. But there's a real truth in that we have to sell it better. And I think what you've identified there in a way is when we talk about startups and scale-ups, we would say, right, what's the team they're joining? What's that mission individually? Because that's, in a way, that micro message is easier to sell. So it might be an interesting part of tech. It might be an interesting part of insurance. And then important is to articulate how does that fit into the overall vision of the business. So that's how I try and make it sound fun. But I did say I was going to set you the challenge of how do we make insurance fun?
So from my perspective, it's challenging with insurance, right? It's premiums, it's claims. My answer to that is just you got to step back and look at the big picture. Why does it exist? What is it doing? Because the fun part, a lot of family gatherings, Thanksgiving or Christmas or anything, family always asks me, what do you do? And can't just say insurance because they're just going to think auto insurance or healthcare insurance, right? What I really talk about is risk management, which is what insurance truly is, right? And I always like to say there's two industries that drive the world that nobody ever thinks about. One is private equity. They're responsible for all the major brands. And number two is insurance. It allows all the major enterprises around the world, all the businesses to take the risks that make them successful. There's a reason AIG had to be bailed out in 2008, right? Why is an insurance company there at the foundation of the global economy or insurance companies? So I like to share that vignette. And I think what's very important to people is they look at the insurance industry, it's not about the premium, it's not about the claims. Yeah, that's how the insurance business is measured. But look back at the problems that are being solved, right? And the solutions that have come of it. Again, seatbelts. I grew up in a time where seatbelts weren't in cars. Now, there's a whole generation that doesn't believe that's ever a thing, right? We're hoping to do with cyber. Changing a very difficult problem through financial means, simplifying it. Insurance just does an amazing job of putting dollars and cents to good risk. And I think giving that context, that bigger picture, and taking it away from just the insurance business helps people get excited about that vision. And they're joining the vision of that problem solving.
Yeah, and I think cyber's the most prominent example at the moment is you see these cyber attacks, they're on the news, we can talk about them, we can make insurance real in that perspective. And I think obviously climate change is one of the biggest opportunities within insurance because it's one of the biggest challenges. So it's coming to those challenges with solutions. But I think we need to be more vocal about it. I think things like events like this are important. People joining podcasts like this are important. They're important for me. But we're out of time there. I think we could go on for a while, but thank you so much, VA. I really appreciate you being part of this, and I appreciate you joining me for the Leadership Insurance Podcast.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Alex.
Thank you. Round of applause for V8, please.